Hi there, my name is Tore Andersson. I work for a company called Red Pill Lintpro, which is a managed service provider operating in Scandinavia. And we run data centers with IPv6 in them, and I guess that's the reason why Alejandro Acosta from LACNIC asked me to talk a little bit about IPv6 only data centers and why and how we are doing that. I can start out by giving you a bit of history, because back in, I think, 2010, we realized that, we would run out of IPv4 addresses, of course, and we had based our entire infrastructure on IPv4, and this was great, because, you know, we could, if we had 100 servers coming in, we could always just go to the RIPE NCC and ask for 100 IPv4 addresses. If you had a million servers coming in, we could do the same, and there was lots of IP addresses to be had, and there was no problem. But of course, we could see that we would eventually run out, and that we would have to do something. And when we were looking at our options on how to actually plan for this inevitable shortage of IPv4 addresses, we were looking at how to deal with that, and of course one obvious thing is to start doing NATs. But this option did not seem very pleasing to us, because we operate an internet data center where we serve content for internet audience, and performance and latency and keeping a low latency is very important for our customers. And if you start doing NATs, then you start putting these stateful devices in the network path. And stateful tracking of all connections in a network is not a very good idea if you care about performance and reliability, because it's hard to scale, it's hard to load balance, and it places constraints on how you can design your network, because all the traffic needs to pass through that single NAT box in both directions. So that wasn't a very a very enticing option. So we wanted to do something else. And of course, we had IPv6. That's another option. But even though IPv6 has limitless IP addresses, as long as you're still dependent on IPv4, deploying IPv6 doesn't really help you, because even if you're deploying IPv6 everywhere, if you're at the same time want to have IPv4 everywhere, you haven't solved anything with regards to running out of IPv4 addresses. So that's the dual stack plan that the IATF originally recommended, but it just won't work anymore, because there are no IPv4 addresses to keep the IPv4 half of your network numbered until everybody else on the internet has deployed IPv6, so that you can start turning off IPv4. So we saw early on that that dual stack was not a very good option. And even if it was, even if we have enough addresses to run dual stack, there's also the problem with complexity. Because when you run a network, you have to write ACLs, set up BGP sessions or OSPF topologies or whatever you want, or you can do monitoring and all sorts of things that you need to do. When you have two protocols in use, you need to do all of those things twice. And of course that means that you're doubling the number of places where you can actually make mistakes and something can go wrong and impact customer traffic. And that is, when you think about that as a network operator, that is bad enough. But we are a managed service operator, which means that our bread and butter is to run services, applications, and so on. Those things are very, very complex. You have, especially nowadays with microservices and containers, and you have lots and lots and lots. In a single rack, you can have thousands of applications talking to each other, and they all talk to each other over the network. So if you want to take all of those endpoints for communication endpoints, and you want to dual stack them, then you have suddenly so many more ways in which an application can operate, and it becomes very, very complex to debug. It becomes very, very complex to understand how to basically the entire flow of information through the application before it actually exits the data center. You can just a very simple example is that you have a database, and the database says that from this IP network you can have a read-write access to some database, and this works fine as long as the client is coming from that IP network. But if you have a dual stack network, or if the client suddenly becomes dual stack, then suddenly he might come from another source address, and suddenly he will no longer have access to the database, and things start failing in perhaps not obvious ways, and you know, you get an unhappy customer because things are not working, and you have to spend time on understanding what is going on. And of course, when you're debugging, you might be looking at in the wrong place, because if you are checking the database over the other protocol, well, it might look fine, and you might, you know, consider it to be working fine, and look somewhere else. So, we realized is that one of the good things about IPv4, or actually IPv4 as we have used to do it before, is not specifically anything about IPv4, but it has to do with the fact that we are running a single stack, so it's easy to deal with and it's easy to understand. And that's why we realized quite early on, I think maybe like 5-6 years ago, that actually we don't want to do dual stack at all. We want to go straight to IPv6 only, because we want to run a single protocol. And of course IPv6 also brings with it some other advantages, like the huge address space. Of course, it's not only that, you know, we can now actually have enough addresses for all our applications and all our servers, but there's also the fact that we never have to, you know, renumber a server LAN again. That's something that that we have often used a lot of time on. Let's say you have a customer, it used to have a /25 of IPv4 addresses on their server LAN. Now the server admin comes and, oh, we're adding 50 more servers to this customer, coming in with a new rack of servers. So we need a bigger LAN prefix. Then we would have to say, well, I have to give you a completely new LAN prefix, because we can't expand the one you have, because the one next to it is used by some other customer, so we can't disrupt them. So then this server operator would need to spend a lot of time in actually changing from one IP network, let's say the /25, to a larger and unrelated /24, and so on. But of course in IPv6 we never have that problem, because all the server LANs are so huge that it's impossible to ever fill up a single LAN. So anyway, I was getting to why dual stack, or explaining why dual I was explaining why we want to do single stack. So IPv6 single stack seemed like a very good option, except for one little thing, and that's the fact, of course, that we need to continue to provide access to our customer services, which is typically things like websites, or you know, email servers, or stuff like that, for clients or readers on the internet that do not have IPv6 access, because there are quite a few of them. They're in a majority, so the thing we realized then is that even though we need to provide this IPv4 connectivity to the external clients, it does not have to set the ground rules for how we operate inside of the data center. So we want to build a solution that allows us to design and operate an IPv6 only data center without regards to IPv4 at all, inside of the four walls of the data center, so to speak. And then we have some sort of a translator or glue layer sitting at where the traffic enters the data center that can just translate traffic from IPv4 to IPv6. So and that, you know, allows us to have a mode of operation where IPv4 is something that only a very small number of networking engineers that operate this translation system need to worry about. Well, all of the server admins and the application developers and so on, they don't have to worry about IPv4 or dual stacked, which makes things much easier for them. They can just think about one protocol stack, and admittedly it is perhaps a bit unfamiliar for a new employee to deal with IPv6 if he has not dealt with IPv6 before, but this is doesn't take too long to adjust to that, because they are not spending that much time working with the networking code anyway. So this solution we came up with anyway is called SIITDC, which stands for Stateless IP ICMP Translation for Data Center Environments. It's an adaptation of an existing standard called just SIIT, and it's adapted to fit the IPv6, data center use case. So basically what it allows us to do is, like I said, to say that if we have a IPv6 only data center with some IPv6 only server or load balancer or whatever it is that is supposed to be accessible from the IPv4 internet because it is, you know, a public website, for example, then we can just set up a static mapping on one or more of these translators between that server's IPv6 address and some public IPv4 address, and that is of course a public IPv4 address that we need to get from somewhere. So here in the RIPE region we get a /22 of IPv4 addresses from RIPE, and that of course allows us to run 1024 public services in this manner. The packet that comes in from the client, the source address of the packet, will just be mapped into a /96-bit prefix. So if you take the entire source address of the client and just put it into an IPv6 address and route it further on into the data center. So the benefit of this is that, of course, once the traffic has passed the translator system and entered the data center, the traffic is indistinguishable from, you know, regular IPv6 traffic. So your firewall, your load balancer, your data center routers, and the web server itself does not need to know anything about this. It just, okay, it's IPv6, and you know all the server software supports IPv6, and there's no problem there. And so you don't need to, you know, take any special considerations inside the data center to support the IPv4, the traffic from IPv4, how to call them, legacy clients, which is really nice. So that's SIITDC. There's a RFC on it if you're interested. Let me see, it's I don't remember the number, but I can find it. RFC 7755. No. Yes. RFC 7755. That's correct. So it is a thing that we actually got through the IETF, so it is hopefully a thought out solution, and there is open source implementations of it as well. One of them, the one we are using, is actually coming out of the LACNIC region. It's called JUL, and it is coming from NIC Mexico and Tecnológico de Monterrey. It's a very, very one great piece of software. It runs on Linux, and you know, the developers are extremely responsive, and they are very great. So I can't recommend JUL enough. The address is JUL, Juliet OscarOscarLima.mx for Mexico. Yeah, very easy to set up and run if you want to try this yourself. I've also been told that you can run this with something called Vector Packet Processing, which is, or VPP, which you can find at fd.io, Foxtrot Delta dot India Oscar. Although I have never tested this myself yet, yeah, that's about it. So we are running Joule on multiple machines, I forgot to mention. Since this is stateless, we can just anycast the addresses and just configure these mapping rules the same on all nodes. So if we have issues with performance or throughput, we can always just add more translation servers. Traffic will just be, you know, load balanced across with ECMP or whatever. And the same with, you know, dealing with failures. If one of the translator fails, then the traffic will just get rerouted to another. And that's all standard IP routing, like OSPF or whatever. There's no, you know, there's no connection tracking. So even if you have a failure in the middle of a TCP connection, it will not drop the connection. It will just continue with some packets lost as it gets rerouted, but that is the same as if a standard router gets dropped. So to sum up, we are running data centers where we have customers in them that are IPv6 only, and these are just regular websites, online editions of newspapers or whatever, you know, buying and selling websites or mail servers, you know, standard stuff, not, you know, technologically advanced pioneering kind of customers or services, really. And we are running them IPv6 only internally, and we are ensuring that all of their users that are still IPv4 only can get to them, and that we do through this stateless translation system. And this has turned out to work really, really, really well. And it's great, because like I said, now our admin folks and developers, they have only one protocol to deal with again, and they don't ever have to worry about not, you know, filling up their server LANs or getting running out of IP addresses on their internal infrastructure, which is great. I would also like to add that even though we are using this SIIT DC with Joule, that's not, you know, the only way to do this. One very well-known example that also run IPv6 only in their data centers for pretty much the same reasons that we do, that's Facebook. And they have some huge data centers, and many of them. And they're saying that they are pretty much exclusively IPv6 only internally. And I think they are using their own sort of HTTP proxy or something like that to provide access for IPv4 only clients on the internet. That is, though, I mean, that works just as well. It's not, they just do essentially the same thing, but they do it on layer 7 instead of layer 3, as what we are doing. But that's really an implementation detail, and maybe easier for them since they are very, very focused on HTTP, obviously. But basic motivation for running IPv6 only inside is the same, and I would really like to for you to finish off by saying that if you're designing a data center, and stop and think, how would you do it if you didn't have any, if you didn't have to worry about all the clients coming in from the, you know, from the global internet, if you only had to worry about how it looked inside. Think, would it make sense then to run single stack and also single stack IPv6? Because if you do, if the answer to that is yes, then you should, because you can do that, and you can provide the access to the external clients afterwards. That's not a problem with this backwards compatibility solution. So that was really, I think, everything that I was asked to answer. I hope you've learned something, or at least I hope that I provoked some thinking about maybe skipping the dual stack step and jumping straight into the IPv6 only world. We are not looking back. We are very happy we made this choice, and we are seeing that our other operators that are stuck in the IPv4 only world with NATs, they are struggling more and more. So we are good to have, you know, left that problem to somebody else. So that's all. Thank you very much. And if there's any questions, you'll find my email address somewhere on the web, and just feel free to get in touch. Okay. Bye-bye.